Justin Garcia, JG, joining me here on Bucks at 6. Justin, hope you're well. I'll throw the poll question at you right away. Which Bucks starter needs to step up most in Saturday's crucial Game 3? Ben Bruss said Giannis yesterday. What say you?
Wow, great minds think alike. I was going to say Giannis as well. I mean, not that he's been bad, but you just need better efficiency. And a lot of that is what the Celtics have done, but I think Drew Holiday is giving you everything you could expect so far through these first two games, basically identical stat lines, and especially where he's getting his shot from. So I don't really have any gripes with what he's given them. But, I guess the only other one you would point to is Brooke Lopez. But, if Giannis has a 40-point game, that's going to offset anything.
Yeah, that's very true, and that's exactly what Ben predicted, right? I mean, he's back on the home court, and Justin, we've talked about it a few times, in the last few weeks, but Giannis really seems to figure it out, right, in games 3 and 4 of playoff series, so I imagine he could go for 40, one of these next two games at Fiserv. So it will be interesting to see how he manipulates the Boston defense, because, you've had a better perspective than I have on it, Justin, but he really does seem to find his groove games 3 and 4 of almost every series he's played in the playoffs. That's fair to say, right?
Yeah, I think the team as a whole really does that as well. And it was actually Ben that brought this up after game one when we were talking on Bucks Talk. But Giannis, we saw this the last time they played the Celtics 3 years ago. I know the numbers have not been pretty despite the triple-double and a near triple-double in game two. You look at his efficiency, and it's not been what you expect to see from him, but he just seems to figure things out as you just went through, and especially when he looks at his individual matchups, he gets a couple of games and then figures out how he needs to attack a guy. And, I think we saw that against the Celtics 3 years ago, where Al Horford was the Giannis stopper for the first game or two of the series, and then Giannis was just getting whatever he wanted against him. Obviously, this iteration, the Celtics has more capable defenders and bodies they can throw at him. But, I look at what Drew Holiday did in two separate possessions where he ended up being matched up on Al Horford. And he scored on him with ease on both of those possessions. And those are things where Giannis looks at it, too. And that's how he figures out how to attack the opponent after he gets some more reps at it. So I do expect him to be better and to be more efficient in the series going forward. But I think the last part we mentioned there is, I don't think there's going to be a series, obviously, where he shoots 50 or 60%. I think he's going to have to work for everything he gets here. I do think it's going to get easier going forward, but it's still going to be a difficult challenge for him and obviously for the rest of this offense going forward.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Justin Garcia, studio host of the Milwaukee Bucks Radio Network, with us here on Bucks at 6. Justin, there's a stat that I would assume, I think it's fair to say, you've been fascinated with, but I'm also fascinated with. You brought it up a ton on Bucks Talk the other night, and that is the fact that the winner of Game 3 in all 10 of the series that Mike Budenholzer has been the head coach of the Bucks in has won the series. What is it with that stat? I'm just fascinated by it. It's so weird that it's worked out that way. Is there any reasoning to it, or is it just nuts?
Man, this is going to be on my tombstone, is guy that pointed out Game 3 winner wins the series 100% of the time under Bud. No, I think part of it is, he's not an in-game adjustment type of coach, and he firmly believes every time we've kind of brought things similar to that up to him, he's one of those guys that believes, if we go down, we're going down with what we do best. And 2-3 years ago, that was a lot of the frustration, I think you would say, with Bucks fans of why don't they switch more and why don't they do this a little differently defensively. And it's something they didn't work on at all through the regular season, so he sticks with that. They've been a little more able to do some of those things, and we certainly saw that with better personnel last year with PJ Tucker. This year it's kind of been, they've used it in spots, but they've primarily been running and drop as soon as Brooke Lopez came back. So this is much more like what we saw 2 and 3 years ago from the team. Mm-hmm. And, it's not going to be a halftime thing. Like, look back to game two where the Bucks were down 25. I didn't anticipate a whole lot to change in that second half. I mean, what you would point to is the biggest adjustment you can make is play better and hit shots. And I think that's what we saw. But he's a guy that just regroups between the series. And, especially now when you've got 3 days off between game 2 and 3, I would expect to see the same, where if they do make some minor adjustments, it's going to come here in game three, because the health component, that's obviously going to be a much bigger advantage for the Celtics. Guys like Marcus Smart is a short-term deal that they're working through. Chris Middleton is not. So, you know, we thought maybe at first 3 days off between two and three could help the Bucks. It's going to help the Celtics, but where it will help them is you're at home, you're sleeping in your own bed. It's time that you have to practice, which is basically gone by the wayside in the regular season. And for those game-to-game adjustments, you got 3 days to practice and work on it in the gym.
Yeah, no, that's a fascinating point. And you know, I said this yesterday. I said this, but it's almost like I had deja vu watching Game Two on Tuesday. It was a flashback to Game Two of that series against the Nets last year. Right, like where it was just horrible, total blowout, couldn't really get anything going, couldn't shoot anything from three, and then we know what happened in that series. So this team just shows flashes of, I don't want to call it incompetency, because it's not that, obviously, but it's just a game where they're just off, and then they come back out. Hopefully they can do the same on Saturday in Game Three and really look completely different than they did in Game Two. So I don't know. Did you get that feel at all from Game Two, Justin, that it was kind of deja vu with that Nets series?
All the way down to the score, basic. I mean, right. At halftime, it was 65-40. At halftime in Game Two of the Nets, it was 65-41 Nets.
Really?
So, it felt like that a lot watching the first half. Obviously, the second half of that game was much different because the Bucks were down at 1.49 in the second half to the Nets, and here they had a couple of charges that, you know, I was actually talking about it with Ben during that game, and there were a couple of sequences you watched and thought, all right, if you could just weather this storm, and you knew the Celtics were going to play a lot better, you knew as well the injury component seemed to kind of favor them, as strange as it is to say that every time you have that and change anything even in the slightest, it just seems to benefit that team. I mean, James Harden goes out 50 seconds into Game One, and the Nets still win that game. In Game Four, the Bucks against the Hawks in the conference finals, we learned same time, about 90 minutes before tip, Trae Young wasn't going to play, and everybody thought, you know, great, the Bucks are dominating here, and they're up 3-1. Obviously, that didn't happen. That was a Giannis injury game, but they were still trailing at halftime when that injury occurred. So I was a little uneasy when you saw the Marcus Smart news, because it felt like everything is just lining up for this team now. They won Game One. Marcus Smart is out. This looks like this should be 2-0. And it's the whole best laid plans thing. So a lot of that reminded me of Game Two, but also, you know, they were obviously more competitive in it. And to me, it was really just a couple of stretches in the game where if you did a better job of weathering that storm and found, you know, any semblance of an offense in the first half, if you could have made that 15 at halftime instead of 25 or 17, it's a much different game in the second half. But a 25-point margin is, it's just too much to overcome against a team as good as the Celtics are defensively.
Yeah, they are really good. They have lived up to the hype through two games defensively, Justin. We've been calling them the best defensive team in the NBA for about a month or two now, and that's proven true so far through these playoffs. But I want to ask Bucks defensively, right? What do you expect, any dramatic changes of what they do defensively after the blowout that was on Tuesday, right? Can we expect maybe a little bit more Jrue Holiday on Jaylen Brown? I mean, what changes do you anticipate maybe seeing Game Three on Saturday?
Well, I hope that Marcus Smart plays, and it sounds like he's going to, I hope he plays. Yeah, and Ime Udoka even kind of said that at the time of Game Two, of they were pretty sure 3 days off were going to help him, but I hope he plays, because it changed a lot of the Bucks rotations and who took who, and we saw Giannis, remember, shift onto Derek White, which I don't really love that matchup, and especially because Derek White was seemingly the only guy on the team that understood, okay, this is how you have to beat a press. Like, you have to equally attack it and get across half court as quickly as you can. You can't give them time to get set up. And that's what Marcus Smart was doing a lot of, and Peyton Pritchard, and that's where they got into trouble. So you kind of had Giannis on his heels, and he wasn't as able to help out quite as much as the help defender. So I think if Marcus Smart plays, you're going to go back to what you saw most of in Game One. And, you know, that's where the Bucks are going to be at their best defensively. So in terms of adjustments defensively, I don't really expect a ton. I think the biggest thing you would point to is, you know, everybody has kind of started to mention some of these numbers, but as great as they were against the Bulls with their jumbo front court that they played, if you had a question or a concern coming into the series without Chris, it was, can this group really hold up? I mean, you could force things against the Bulls and dictate the pace of play because the Bulls were an inferior team. But you know, Boston is certainly more capable defensively, and the minutes, granted it's not a huge sample size, but the minutes with all three of those guys on the floor have not been great in this series. They've been much better when it's just Giannis and Bobby Portis, or Giannis and Brooke Lopez, primarily the Giannis and Bobby, and then you have Brooke coming in, so you always have a rim protector on the floor. So I do wonder if they change the starting five, and if it's not Brooke removed, which I'd be hard-pressed to imagine, if it's Bobby coming off the bench and picking your spots of when you use that group. I think that's the biggest adjustment you would see, but to me, it's offensively that you have to get better quality shots, and you have to figure out how to get Giannis involved, not as the ball handler and not down on the block or on the nail and with his back to the basket. You got to get back to screening him and using him as the screener, whether it's Grayson Allen or Drew Holiday. We saw a lot of that work in the second half. And, you know, that Bucks half-court offense has been pretty bad in this series, as you would expect. Celtics are a good defense, but Boston was, you know, adequate in the half-court offensively in game two. A lot of that had to do with their shot-making, but, you know, these are two, I would say, bad half-court offenses. So whoever plays better defensively and finds those matchups, they're going to end up winning this series. And I think that's what the first two games have told.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Justin Garcia, Milwaukee Bucks studio host on the radio network with us. You hear him pre, half, and post game on the Milwaukee Bucks radio network here on 100.5 ESPN and Madison, 620 WTMJ in Milwaukee, as well as on Bucks Talk after every Bucks game on these stations. Justin, last basketball-related question for you, because, as I said, you've watched the Bucks a lot closer than I have, especially throughout the regular season. This four-guard set, because you just referred to the jumbo set we've seen kind of, you know, in these starting lineups, but that four-guard set that Bud went to, you know, he's gone to it a few times in these playoffs, but he went to it in that first quarter in game two when they were down huge. Is that kind of a new thing? Is that something we can expect to see more or less of? Because I noticed it after Chris Middleton went down quite a bit. It seems like it works, but not so much obviously in game two because nothing was really working. What do you make of that four-guard set that we've seen, and can we expect more or less of it, I guess, going forward?
I'm not really sure. I don't love it in this series just because of what Boston is able to throw out there at the Bucks defensively. And, you know, you really, if you're going to do that, you have to get in transition. And I think that's another big opportunity that the Bucks have here in game three, is they didn't get in transition all that much in game number two, that the frequency was down. Only about 12% of their possessions were in the half court or in transition in that game. And they're closer to 20-25 during the regular season. So, you know, Bud was asked about that after the game and said, you can't get in transition when you're taking the ball out of the net, which is true. But I think they left some opportunities on the table there. When you get rebounds, you got to push it against the Celtics team and don't let them get set. The four-guard lineup, it's really tough to do without Chris Middleton as technically one of those guards. And, right. And we saw it in game two in this series, is you absolutely have to get stops defensively if you're doing that, because you're leaving yourself pretty vulnerable offensively. The Celtics are going to let Pat Connaughton take some shots. The Celtics don't really trust Pat Connaughton rolling to the rim against Robert Williams. The Celtics have no trust in Javon Carter either. So they're going to sag off of some of those shooters and help out on Giannis a little more. So it's something that you can certainly do against the Bulls. You can do against a handful of teams in the Eastern Conference here. You could do it against the Sixers if you advance, and that's somehow who you end up facing in the second round. But this Celtics team and the Heat team as well, if you don't have Chris Middleton, I think it's just tough to pull off. You got to kind of pick your spots, and I think that's what we did see for the most part in game one. The minutes where Peyton Pritchard's on the floor, that's an area where you can do it. But when you look at what the Celtics are throwing out there defensively, it's really tough to get by with that group in this series.
Yeah, that was kind of my takeaway as well, but I wanted to hear it from your perspective. All right, non-basketball question time now, Justin, which I know you always enjoy. So I chatted with Ben Brust yesterday, as maybe you heard a bit before. He told me that he's going to get a pedicure tomorrow on his day off. Have you ever gotten a pedicure? And B, are you for or against getting a pedicure if I offer it to you?
Oh, I mean, do you have that power to line it up?
I'll have my people talk to your people, yeah.
Okay. I have, let me think about it. No, I don't think I have. I'm not opposed to it. I just have never sought it out. But if you have the ability to set that up, or maybe I shouldn't even tell Ben, and I should just tag along and get one as well.
Well, I'm thinking me and you go crash it. So he called it his girl's day, yeah. Right? He's going with his former roommate, who is a girl, and they're having a yeah. girl's day, quote-unquote, tomorrow. So, Justin, I think maybe you and I should just show up and crash their, quote-unquote, girl's day.
I'm down. We just got to be back before 7 so I can catch SmackDown. But other than that, sure.
So now my follow-up on that, because you bring up wrestling, what's on Thursdays? Because there's no NBA basketball tonight. I need to find something to watch, too. What are you watching tonight?
That's a great question. So I believe TNA Impact is on, or it's just Impact. I believe that's Thursdays. I've never watched it, but okay. I hear people talk about it. I don't know. I still have yet to start or catch up on the newest/final season of Ozark, so maybe that. I mean, there is some playoff hockey, but my Blues aren't playing either, so I guess if a game is close, then that. But I'm kind of open for the day.
Well, there you go. Well, enjoy it. You've got a couple days off. Godsmack at Fiserv Forum tomorrow. Will or will you not be attending?
I will not be there. My Godsmack fandom topped out in 2002 after the first album. So, yeah, I'm going to take a pass on that.
I saw them in 2018. They were solid, but like I imagine they were a hell of a lot better in the 90s because they've been going for like 30 years. Now, is there validity to the claim I've heard? And I talked about it yesterday on Bucks at 6. But is it true that the NBA wanted Game 3 to be tomorrow, but with the Godsmack conflict, they had to move it to Saturday? Is that actually what the case is, or is that just a crazy rumor?
I believe it is because they do like to do, and we saw it last year in the series between the Bucks and the Nets. There is one portion of the series where they do a pair of days off to allot for travel, and they try to make that at the turn, the first time in the series when you shift city. So I do think it was supposed to be tomorrow, and this just threw everything off. So, I mean, if you're in the other series, too, you're thinking if you're the Grizzlies and the Warriors, like, so we have to wait for 3 days as well? Like, I'm kind of stunned there wasn't anything today and they just punted the day altogether.
Yeah, that surprised me as well because I don't really remember a gap like this in years prior, only in the second round, but maybe I'm just forgetful, which could be the case. Justin, always appreciate the time, buddy. We'll do it again soon, all right?
All right, we'll see you later.
That's Justin Garcia, studio host on the Milwaukee Bucks Radio Network. You can connect with him on Twitter. I promise he's a good follow, especially if you're a wrestling fan, at TMJ Garcia. We will go around the NBA next, but I do want to hear from you. 800-990-3776. That is the First Midwest Bank talk and text line. 800-990-3776. First Midwest Bank, a division of Old National Bank. Which starter do you believe needs to step up the most in Game 3 on Saturday? It's a pivotal game. It's a crucial game. As we just talked about with Justin, every winner of Game 3 in a series that Mike Budenholzer has coached for the Bucks has won the series. So it's a big one. If you're a believer in that statistic, who needs to step up most? Let me know. 800-990-3776. We'll dive into some of your answers and go around the NBA. It's next. It's Bucks at 6 here on ESPN Wisconsin.